Solitaire Rose Novelcast, After the Fall, Part 7. It's New Year's Eve, and time for a new episode. I said it would be every 2 weeks after I had that 1 week where I couldn't get it done. Here you go. The Novelcast comes out every 2 weeks. What has gone before? After the Fall is set 5 years after civilization has fallen due to a zombie attack. One of our characters, Mark, has met up with a group of pilgrims who are going toward Graceland and appear to be Elvis worshippers. Another of our survivors, Ray, has escaped from a military base because he couldn't take being cooped up anymore and he wants to know what's going on out in the real world. Another of our survivors, Wendy, has met up with two women who have convinced her to leave her safe house and look for a better way of life. So Wendy is traveling with Angela and Alice. Another thing to remember, one of the zombies, named Eddie, appears to be intelligent, and it appears that this mutation may not just be him. And now, the next part of After the Fall. Ray had been walking for almost a week before he saw another human being. He was finding safe places to sleep every night, and he had talked to Marcus every night for at least a half hour so that he didn't feel completely alone. He had learned that Marcus had set up a pretty good safe house in Iowa, complete with electricity and computer access. Ray wanted to hit the army base in Missouri before heading up to Iowa, mostly to see why his CO hadn't wanted him to go there. It could be nothing, but he also remembered that when the zombies first showed up, it had been around that base. Of course, he had a damn good idea as to why. Still, he had to know. He had to make sure. Part of him wondered if there were still people there, working on stopping the nightmare. Maybe that was why his CO didn't want him to go there. Then again, it didn't make a lot of sense to keep him away if they were working on something that would kill the zombies. In the end, what did make sense? Nothing that had happened over the last 5 years had made sense if you kept to the old thinking. Now it was different, and you needed to be aware of the new world and quit clinging to the old one. When he was young and his father took him hunting, he asked him why the deer took off with every sound instead of seeing if the sound was made by something dangerous. Now he knew why. He was the deer, and nothing mattered. Nothing but moving forward, finding food, and keeping safe. Marcus sounded a lot different than the people who'd been on the base. He didn't sound young, but the way he looked at the world was just about the same as a teenager. He thought that if he just sat tight long enough, everything would come back on. Who was he to destroy someone's dream? The good thing was that the kid, he called him a kid even though he had to be in his mid-20s, asked a lot of questions about the base and the people there. He had pretty much given up on anyone ever contacting him and only turned on the radio for static at night to help him go to sleep, and had to contact him when he heard the conversation. Marcus had also tried to talk to the people at the base, but they told him to get off the channel because it was restricted to military use only. Security. Even now, they worried about security and protocol. It made Ray laugh, even if it was an utter waste of time. Ray had spent the morning walking, but it was starting to get toward late afternoon, so he was hunting. He hadn't found a place to spend the night, but hunger had driven him toward looking for something to eat rather than some place to sleep. Part of him said that he shouldn't worry about a place to sleep, since he hadn't seen a single zombie since that morning in the mobile home, but he knew that the minute he let down his guard, he'd be zombie chow. He crept through the woods, hoping to see a rabbit or something, anything edible. But it had been quiet all around him, with only small birds and squirrels. As hungry as he was, he'd rather break open an MRE than eat one of those rats with furry tails, and any small bird would be obliterated by his guns. He'd been silently going through the woods for long enough that the shadows were getting longer when he heard something, far away, on his right. He didn't know if it was an animal, a person, or... That was a bad thing. He always had to keep in the back of his mind that it might be one of the living dead, which even sounded like a painfully bad cliché when he said it out loud. He slowly dropped to the ground, made a nice waiting place in the fallen leaves, and paused. He heard the sounds coming closer. It sounded like something walking through the leaves. It was getting nearer, and all he had to do was quietly wait. As he waited, he hoped it was a large animal, like a cow or a pig, even though cows were amazingly rare. Most of them had died out when the fall came, because they had become so dependent upon the medical help and strange food that they couldn't survive without humans taking care of them. Pigs, on the other hand, became almost as common as rabbits and squirrels for a while. The zombies found that they didn't have to feed on human flesh. Any freshly killed flesh would do, and they became the pig's natural predator. His mouth watered as he thought about shooting a pig and stripping it down to the bone, roasting it over a fire. He'd even stay up all night for something like that and worry about sleeping the next day. He remembered how to strip and store a pig from his training he'd had after the fall, when they became hunters for meat and farmers for vegetables and the like. He'd even learned how to dry some of the meat so that it would last in his backpack for a few days. When he closed his eyes, he could see the pig over the fire, roasting, getting ready to be the best meal he'd had in months. The sounds were getting closer. He slowly turned his body around on the ground so that he was positioned to watch for whatever it was. He thought that it was probably a zombie, and he'd taken all these precautions for nothing. The sound kept getting closer, and whatever it was didn't much care if it had been heard. It wasn't an animal, he was sure of that. Animals would walk a bit, then stop and look around, making sure they were safe, and this thing was walking with a normal, steady gait. Either human or zombie. Either way, he wasn't going to get that rib dinner. After a further wait, he saw the thing that was making the sounds. Not a zombie, thankfully. It was a man who looked to be in his mid-20s, dark hair and beard, dressed in army fatigues, and carrying about 5 rabbits. He had a gun slung over his shoulder casually, and he looked as if he had been tromping about in the woods all day. Ray popped up, gun at the ready, and the man immediately dropped his game and drew his weapon as well, saying, "What the hell do you want?" "Who are you, and why are you walking around in the woods like the Jolly Green Giant?" Ray said, still holding his gun on the man. "My name's Mark. Why is it any of your business? Do you own the woods or something?" "No," Ray said, still at the ready. "You just seem like you don't have a worry in the world, and you're making enough noise to bring the dead running for dinner." Mark actually smiled at that and slowly lowered his weapon. "I'm not worried about the bastards. Betsy here can take care of them, and they aren't as stealthy as you are." "I suppose you're right," Ray said, "but aren't you being a little greedy with the bunnies?" "If I were alone, yeah, but I'm with a group of people." "How many?" "Last count, 112. But you don't get any more information about me until I get a name." "Ray." "Ray Walker," he said, finally lowering his gun. "U.S. Army, deserter." "How did you hook up with 112 people around here? We're nowhere near a big city. I haven't seen any houses big enough to hold that many people." Mark smiled and slung the rabbits back over his shoulder. "They're pilgrims, and I've joined up with them for a few miles just to have the company of strangers. They're going to Graceland." "You're kidding. Elvis worshippers?" "You'd think so. Some of them are, but I think the rest joined up to have something to believe in. The leader and I are talking a lot. The way he makes it sound, they started in Arizona and been gathering people up as they march across the country." Ray holstered his pistol and started walking along with Mark. Neither one said anything about Ray joining. Ray liked that he could let his actions speak, and Mark didn't much care what other people did. The trees were losing some of their leaves. It was odd to see so many leaves on the branches. Most trees were still green and had a majority of their leaves. Weird southern weather. It hadn't really gotten cold yet. It was probably getting into early November by now. They walked about a mile in silence. As they kept on, Ray decided to break the silence to find out more about what he was walking into. They took to telling each other what they'd done since the TVs and the light bulbs all went out. Mark was shocked that Ray had left a hot bed and a warm meal to run around in the cold woods and look for bunnies, and Ray was wondering how Mark had been around all this time without having anyone traveling with him. "Funny thing about that," Mark said. "Last person I had with me was Betsy. She was former National Guard. Knew her way around a gun and was a good traveling companion. We were moving south earlier this year. She thought it might be a good idea to get to Florida and see if there were any cities there that had been able to keep most of the zombies out. Rumor mills keep stuff like that alive, I guess. Round about Illinois, she got killed. We ran into a zombie nest. Had to be a couple dozen of them. We tried blasting our way out. She didn't make it, he said simply and finally. What have you done since then?
Survive.
After that, they walked in silence the rest of the way back to the camp. The people had stopped at a highway rest stop and turned it into their camping grounds. There were a few fires going. Most of the horses were tied to the signs about where to get your truck weighed or how far till the next city. Mark was greeted happily upon his return, and the people started singing Hound Dog as if it were Amazing Grace. Ray had a lot of trouble not laughing at it when Mark introduced him to the leader. Leader was a balding man with long gray hair, jowly face, and kind blue eyes named Joel. After short introductions, he stepped away from the rest of the group to talk to Ray. Ray filled him in on the army base, and how the people there wouldn't allow travelers in. That's fine, Joel said, his voice a deep, rich baritone. We're pretty much determined to make it to Graceland. Why Graceland? Ray asked. Memphis can't be in very good shape, with the zombies congregating in the cities. Graceland wasn't even in the good part of Memphis.
That's easy, Ray, the older man said, as if explaining something to a small child. Graceland is where Elvis is from. He rose from the dead before this plague, and his home will keep us safe until we are delivered.
Ray looked deadly serious. Do you really believe that?
Joel moved closer so they could talk quietly.
Look at those people. They're singing. They have hope. They aren't worried about their lives anymore. They believe that when they get there, it will be safe. And to be honest, just about any place with a 15-foot-high fence and turrets can be made into a safe place. They might have believed in Jesus coming back before all of this. Now they believe in Elvis. What's the harm in the belief if they feel safe because of it?
Are they safe?
Joel sighed. Are any of us?
Ray laughed at that and said, I guess not.
They rejoined the rest of the people. Through the night they ate and sang and told stories of life from before the fall. There was no real leader to the conversation, and Ray enjoyed the differences between this conversation and the ones he had had on the base. They were all about duty and honor. And this was just people talking about what used to matter to them and what they want out of life now. In the end, they all wanted the same thing, to be able to go to bed without worrying if they would be under attack when they woke up. None of them missed having to have jobs they hated, paying for cars and homes that they never got to enjoy, or the fact that the news kept them scared all the time about things that didn't matter now. No one knew about what was going on anywhere but here. No one was worried about if some country had better food or better medical care. It was all about surviving. Social Security, other nations attacking, black people coming out of the inner city to kill rich white people in the suburbs, all a long faded memory that had nothing to do with their life anymore. It was during this conversation that Ray wondered if the dreams of people like Susan, dreams of getting the world back the way it was a waste of time. The world wasn't exactly what people wanted. Now they had a chance to live totally new lives. As people slowly finished their meals and started to put the children to bed, Joel stood up and said, I think it is important that we thank our two newest travelers, Ray and Mark. They didn't have to join us. They don't share our belief, but they're welcome to stay with us as long as they want. Before we all go to bed and our guards start their evening watches, let's share a song with our new friends. They all sang Jailhouse Rock as if they were in church. And Ray was surprised to realize that he knew all the lyrics. He'd never been an Elvis fan, but obviously he'd had to have heard them when he was a child. The crowd dispersed, and he was left at the fire with Mark, Josh, a few other people who were obviously the guards for the evening, as they got out guns and were discussing who would take what watch. Ray asked where he could sleep, and Josh pointed toward one of the cars that no one was using that night. Ray thanked him, but said he had a sleeping pack in his kit and wanted to sleep on the ground. Why? Josh asked. I've had to sleep in beat-up mobile homes, basements, secluded caves since I left the base. I'd like to be able to sleep out under the stars without worrying about what I'll wake up to.
Yeah, Mark said, ending his almost evening-long silence.
It was when he spoke that Ray realized Mark hadn't said anything since they got back to the camp.
I had to go from basement to basement for so long that sleeping outside was just wonderful. I woke up with clear lungs for the first time in years, none of that old house dust aggravating my allergies. Joel laughed quietly. I know how you feel. When I was in Arizona, I thought I would be living for the rest of my life in the bomb shelter we were hiding in. When I decided to leave, the others thought I'd lost my mind. It was only when I got out that I realized that if I'd stayed down there any longer, I'd be the one going insane. What did you do, you know, before the fall? Ray asked, getting comfortable on the ground by the fire. I was a scientist, Joel said simply. I worked in nuclear bomb research. It's how I paid the bills. Not proud of it now, but I was then. I was one of those people that felt that anything we did to protect America was right and true and good. Now it looks like we did the one thing our enemies and the liberals said we would do. We destroyed the world. We did what? Mark asked, looking a bit upset. Destroyed the world. You didn't believe the crap that this thing was done by Saddam Hussein, did you? Mark looked confused and said, I don't know. I heard a lot of different things. Some people said it was part of the Bible coming true. Others said it was something to do with aliens. The official position was that no one knew what caused it. And in my opinion, if they knew what caused it, they probably would have been able to get away from it. Joel looked at him the way the father looks at a confused child. What did you do before the fall? Mark looked a bit sheepish and said, I worked at a pizza place and went to community college. My parents couldn't afford to send me to a university. Nothing wrong with that, son, Joel said, without a hint of condescension. Two of my three children worked their way through college. None of them are with me anymore, but they were good kids who worked hard and did the best they could. I didn't hear much since communications were in bad shape once the zombies started up. But most of the people who worked with me said that they thought it was an army biological agent that went haywire. Ray perked up at that. Did they say where those people worked? Joel thought a bit and said, no one seemed to know. It was all pretty much rumor and the like by the time people were seriously talking about it. You have to remember, they kept a lid on it for the first couple of months. It was in an out-of-the-way place, and the media didn't cover anything the government didn't want covered. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the big-name guests on their interview shows. Ray frowned. I remembered that. I just wondered, since I asked about investigating the Missouri Army base. Whenever I asked about investigating the Missouri Army base, my CO said that it was still off-limits. Army procedure, Joel said, looking disgusted. If ignoring a problem would make it go away, we'd have never had to fight a war. Matt spoke up and said, has anyone tried to go to that base and see what happened? Maybe there are still people there and... And what? Ray asked. Maybe they have a cure for this thing, Mark said. He quickly added, not that I'm nuts or anything, but if your base was still operating in radio silence, maybe they are too. And if they have information about stopping those things, maybe we can help. Joel leaned back and thought for a minute. After a short time, he stood up and said, I have to go to sleep. Tomorrow we need to make good time, and the next rest area is at least 2 days away, so we'll have to camp in the woods. People need more time to get ready for that. That should give you a bit of time to decide how far you're going to go with us, Mark. Aren't you interested in the Missouri Army base? Mark asked. Joel shook his head. Nope. I'm going to Graceland. It's as good a place as any to wait for things to happen. And with that, he turned and left. The fire was burning down to the embers. Ray was starting to feel the cold nip of the fall air. He grabbed his sleeping kit out of his pack and started rolling it out. Mark was adding more wood to the fire and using his own backpack as a pillow. When they were both laid down, Mark spoke again, asking, when did you know it was all over? When what was all over? Ray asked, hoping that this conversation wouldn't last very long. Civilization, Mark said. I knew that things were pretty much over when they shut off the emergency broadcast system on the radio and there was no more Rush Limbaugh to listen to. I remember that, Ray smiled at the memory. At the time, I was all into the guy, but now I see that most of what he talked about those last months was crap. Iraq didn't do this, the president didn't have a plan. They just distracted us while they hightailed it out of Dodge. I knew things were over when our CO called all the senior officers into his office and ordered the base closed to all refugees. Ray's face grew dark in the firelight. He ordered us to shoot anyone who might come asking for help, telling us that they might be enemy agents. And even if they weren't, we didn't have the food to feed them. He rolled over on his side, turning his back to Mark. It was horrible. The first couple of months before word got out, I did. He paused, feeling tears. I followed orders, and that was no excuse. I stopped protecting my country and started protecting myself instead. That's how I knew it was all over. And neither of them said another word the rest of the night. Ray's dreams were filled with memories. I marked it in sleep for many hours after that. It was 3 days on the road before Wendy felt terrible about leaving the house with Angela and Alice. The first 2 days it was a lot like when she would leave with Tim to look for supplies. They were still close enough that if she wanted, she could make it back on her own without having to worry about where she would sleep. When the sun was in the middle of the sky on the third day, she realized she'd really left home. It felt more final than when Tim died, which made her start to descend into shame. She felt like she cared more about the house and security than she did Tim as a human being, but having made it this far made her feel like she'd been horrible to him. All he'd done was take care of her, treat her well. She was over him in days. But losing the house? That was what made her sad? Maybe the zombies weren't the monsters. She didn't talk to them about it, since she'd done so much to put up a brave front about leaving. They'd locked the basement of the house, set the bunnies free, and made sure the fence was locked in case they came back. She didn't think they would. However, if for some reason they did, they didn't want to have to clear the place of the dead again. They all knew that if anyone found the house, they'd be able to get in, and they'd find the hidden supplies if they just looked through the house, but it made her feel better to go through the ritual of securing the place. Then they walked. They had said they were sticking with their plan of heading north since winter was fast approaching. They didn't know if they'd make it to Canada, but they wanted to find a secured place above the frost line within the next month or so. Where they would go from there, no one talked about. It was a dirty little secret that no one really thought much beyond a couple of months. The fourth day, they passed close to a town. She wasn't sure what it was, but it was near enough that she could see the skyline of a city. There were still high-rise buildings, and the interstate was still in good shape. Wendy was tempted to ask if they would head into the city, just to take a look and see what it was like, but as soon as they saw a building over 5 stories, Alice changed direction and took the long way around. When they traveled, they didn't talk much. It was only at night when they camped that they talked, and it was mostly about where they were going or how far they were going to move the next day. Wendy wasn't used to so much walking, and was usually asleep quickly when they stopped for the day. Her sleep was deep, dreamless, and rarely enough when they would wake her up before the sun came up to get packed so they could be moving again by dawn. Her body was able to take the pace, though, since she had done a lot of physical work around the house when she lived there. The fifth day, they ran across 2 zombies wandering down the road they were hiking on. They dropped them from a distance. It always struck her as unnerving how they wouldn't make a single sound as they died. No attempt to protect themselves, just the same mindless gait until the bullet would rip through their brain and they'd drop to the ground, lifeless once again. That was the extent of their trouble the first week. They left the road a few times as Alice would lead them forward. Alice had had more training in maps, so she led the way, working the compass, the maps, and always knowing where they were and how far they had to go before they slept. Most of the travel was through what used to be farm country. There were clusters of woods here and there, but for the most part it was fields that had been left on their own. Corn was being choked out of them by prairie grass and weeds. Soybeans were below the grass in some of the fields. They would pick the still green pods and shove them in their backpacks for eating later. She'd never tasted a soybean before this march, and was surprised at how good they were. The prairie grass was everywhere, tall, almost looking like wheat. She remembered the conversation she'd had with her uncle years before when he told her if not for humans planting crops and killing everything else, the whole country would be awash in the stuff. It looked beautiful. More than once they came over a hill and she was awestruck at how the wind would make it look like waves of water flowing down the hill. On the 8th day their supplies were running low. They started the morning a bit later than most, and Alice was talking about how they needed to find a place to stay for a few days and gather up food again. Angela made a joke about how they could go back to the house, load up again, and come back, but no one really laughed. They walked, not talking, eyes searching for a house that looked safe enough that they could stay for a few days. They passed one that had caught on fire at some point, was now a blackened husk on the top of a hill. As day turned into afternoon, they began to talk as they walked, giving theories as to what happened to the burned house. Alice's was a typically dark tale of a family that went insane while locked in the basement, waiting for help to arrive. Angela's was the story of a couple who'd moved into the house after the fall, then had to escape during a terrible storm as lightning hit the house and caused it to burn, with them barely getting out of the house in time. Wendy's story was that the people who lived there burned it down as they left, not wanting anyone else to have it. They didn't go to the house itself to see which of the stories was most likely. They just kept moving and looking. Hours later, they saw a secluded driveway leading off the road. The trees were still holding their leaves, so it was impossible to see where the road's offshoot led. "I would say this is going to be our best bet," Alice said, indicating what had to be a driveway. "If not, let's still use this place to camp," Angela said. "It can't take much more walking today. I'm starting to get cramps, and that's no time to be easing down the road." "Shit," Alice muttered. "If you're starting to PMS, and I'm going to be kicking in any day now. Two things I miss from the old world are soft beds and the pill." They turned off the road and walked about a mile when they saw an old plantation mansion. The place was surrounded by what looked like a new wire mesh fence, which meant that someone else either lived here or had in the near past. Before the fall, people used wooden fences. They just needed something that looked good and told people where the property line was. After the zombies started showing up, wire mesh was more precious than gold. People fought over it in hardware stores, and there were reports of people stealing fences that were already built during the night, leaving the people inside unprotected. Wood fences weren't good anymore. Wood breaks when beat on long enough. Wire mesh would hold as long as the posts holding it were solid. It looked like the people who had been were still here had fenced off a lot of the land. They couldn't even see where the fence was around the house since it went into the woods partway, allowing for apple and peach trees to be inside the fence. The gate was closed, the front of it wired shut instead of held together by a lock. Wendy didn't know if that meant the people who were here had left, or they just didn't want to deal with locks anymore. "You go right," Alice said, pointing at Angela. "Wendy, you go left, and I'll check the house itself. We'll meet back here in about 20 minutes. If you're in trouble, fire your gun. We'll be able to hear that." They nodded silently and went on their way. Angela had gotten the direction away from the woods, and Alice went quickly to work untwisting the wire that was holding the gate closed. Wendy looked into the woods where her section of fence led and saw nothing. Wendy dropped her backpack at the front gate. "I don't think I'll need this," she muttered to no one in particular, and got her rifle at the ready. She looked at the house, and it was huge. It had to be 3 times the size of the one she and Tim had been living in, with 3 stories, boarded-up windows, and ivy with leaves that were turning red due to the coming winter. It was a majestic house, and had to have been quite a sight before everything came tumbling down. There were dying bushes all around the house, and what looked like it had been once a flower garden, but it now was being used for vegetables. She looked away from the house and off into the woods she had been chosen to scout. They were thick, and she could only see a short distance into them. She looked around for Angela or Alice, just to tell them she was going in, but they were already gone, out of sight. Alice must have gone into the house, and Angela was going around the fence the other direction. She shrugged and thought to herself the fence wasn't very long, and she'd meet up with her in a few minutes. The sun was making mid-afternoon shadows, and when she stopped in the woods, it was like the sky had suddenly filled with clouds. The fruit trees were all inside the fence, while on the outside were a bunch of big maples and oaks. The underbrush was pretty dense, and in the weeds were a bunch of smaller trees, none so big that she wouldn't have been able to pull them out of the ground with her bare hands. As she walked, she heard her steps crunching the leaves and dead grass behind her. It didn't seem as dark in the trees as when she was outside of them. She walked along the fence, trying to keep the house in her sight the whole time. About 100 yards into the woods, she heard a sound off in the distance. Wendy aimed her rifle toward the sound and looked off in the direction it had come from. She stared off into the distance, almost thinking that if she concentrated on it hard enough, she would be able to see better. As it was, she saw nothing out of the ordinary. She was torn. Should she keep following the fence or check out the noise? Finally, she decided she needed to check out the noise in case they decided to stay here. She wanted to know that they had checked out every possible problem. The woods went down a hill, and she could see that at the bottom of that hill was a very small creek, one that she wouldn't have been able to step across without getting her shoes wet. The hill wasn't very steep, but the ground was covered in leaves and dead grass, so she walked carefully, making sure of each step so that she didn't slip and tumble down. Suddenly, she heard something off to her left, and when she turned, she stepped on a fallen tree branch and twisted her ankle. The pain shot up her leg, and she felt her ankle completely give way. She fell to the ground, hitting hard and knocking the wind out of her. She struggled to breathe, the air not going into her lungs as she felt the world fade a bit before she was able to catch her breath again. When she looked again at the place where she thought she'd heard the sound from, she saw them. 7 zombies, lumbering toward her. They were closing faster than she could process. Zombies were slow, but the lead one seemed to be moving fast, almost as if he were running. That couldn't be possible. They didn't run. She must have hit her head harder than she thought. The one in the lead was wearing a red bandana. She leveled her gun and fired before he was on her. She missed, and he was on top of her, pinning her to the ground. As she struggled to get away, a pain worse than anything she'd ever felt shot through her chest. When she looked down, she saw the zombie with the red bandana had punched her so hard that his hand was embedded in her chest. And that was the last image she ever saw. And there you go, After the Fall, Part 7. Part 8 will be in 2 weeks. If this is the first episode of the Solitaire Rose Novel Cast you've listened to, please go back and listen to the earlier episodes to get caught up. Our last episode even had a special short story called Rush Job. I was going to do it as a separate episode, but since the short story was so short, I decided I would just release it as part of this. In a couple of weeks, I'll release it in the Solitaire Rose radio podcast, my solo podcast I do over at crazycomics.solitairerose.com, just so it could stand on its own, so you guys got a little Christmas bonus a couple of weeks early. I want to thank people for the feedback I'm getting. Hopefully the improvements are starting to show. We are on the downside. We are rushing toward the conclusion of this novel, and I have decided what the next novel in the novel cast will be. But the plan is for when this one is complete, within a week or so, there will be an ebook available on Amazon, and we will start up the next novel. One of the things about the podcast and the Solitaire Rose Network is that we do have ads. Here's our ads. This, as well as every other podcast on the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, is sponsored. And if you want to visit all of our sponsors, go to crazycomics.solitairerose.com. That's the mothership, crazycomix.solitairerose.com. It's got our Amazon store. You can go through our Amazon store. The prices are the same as if you just went to Amazon, except they let us wet our beak a little. It's got our other sponsors like Gray's. It's got a Dollar Shave Club, and it's got Joe's eBay site. It's got Jen Wicked's Patreon site. You have signed up to be one of her Patreons, right? Well, if you haven't, pause this podcast, go right over there. Be one of her Patreons. That way she can make more art and be on the podcast more often. Go to Joe's eBay site. He throws in free stuff. Now, if you want to support the Solitaire Rose Network, go to our sponsors, including our number one sponsor, our sponsor from day one, DreamHost.com. The best bar none web host in the whole known universe. That's DreamHost.com. If you use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you save $20 off your first year of web hosting, and you need a website. We have a new sponsor, and I'm very happy to have this sponsor, and they are Bombas. Bombas have some of the best socks in the whole known universe. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. You want to know why I'm happy to have Bombas as a sponsor? Not just because their socks are great, but because for every sock you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or a crisis center. We've got all sorts of podcasts. These podcasts are stories about life, about comics, interviews with people, fiction. It's go listen to them all. Listen to Crazy Comics and Stories. And if you're already listening to that, listen to Solitaire Rose Radio. And if you're already listening to that, listen to Solo Joe. He'll put out another one. Really, he will. And our newest podcast, novels.solitairerose.com. It's Corey turning the novels he's written into audiobooks. It's new. It's exciting. Go over there. Listen. Subscribe. Another way to support us is to subscribe. Subscribe using YouTube. Subscribe using Stitcher. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's Corey Strode at YouTube. That's where we're putting up the podcast every week. Every time a new podcast comes out, and we put up a new video of it. Give us a good review. Review us on iTunes. Review us on Stitcher. Review us on anywhere. Pass those links along. Let people know about it. That's how you could support us. I got some people over Christmas who said they wanted to send me something. That's wonderful. It's beautiful. Thank you so much. But if you really want to support the website, you really want to support the podcast, you want to show us the love, you want to show us you love us, tell everyone you know. Go over to Jen Wicked's Patreon site, subscribe to her stuff, go to Joe's eBay site, buy your eBay crap off of him, go to our sponsors, and tell them, hey, I heard about this on one of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts. We love hearing from you. You can email us. We have a new email address at solitairerosenetwork.gmail.com. We've got a phone number. You can call or leave a message, and we will play it on the air. And that number is 952-856-0519. And we're all over the Facebooks. You want to support us? When we put up a new episode, share that link. Let people know. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Wake the kids. Shake the dog. Let the dog know. Maybe the dog wants to listen. I don't know. When I had a cat, she loved listening to me. She would come out here and she would sit right at my feet while I would record, looking at me, begging for treats. Maybe your dog, your cat, your goldfish. I don't know. If you got a pet monkey. Okay, if you got a pet monkey, I want to hear about it. Give us a call. Send us an email. But support us. Do it that way. We love you, so show us some love. Thanks. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for sharing this with your friends. I want to thank everybody for all the positive feedback and all the criticism that has helped me improve this podcast. It is listened to and highly appreciated. The next part is coming in 2 weeks. So thanks for listening.